Welcome to the Polygamer Podcast, where gaming is for everyone. Join us as we expand the boundaries of the gaming community.
Hello and welcome to the Polygamer Podcast, episode number 60 for Wednesday, February 15th, 2017. Today I'm very excited to be discussing the topic of speedrunning, finishing video games as quickly as possible. And to help me with that, joining me today is the co-captain of the team Girls on Fire, that being Kung Fu Fruit Cup. Hello, Fufu.
Hello, how's it going?
It's going well, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, thank you.
Thank you for taking time away from your Twitch stream, I appreciate it.
Oh, it's okay. It's no problem. Usually when I'm not streaming, I'm doing stream-related things anyway.
And you have a stream coming up, what, your every day, is it?
I try to stream about 6 hours a night, 6 nights a week.
Wow.
So yes, I will be streaming tonight.
That is 36 hours. That is basically a full-time job.
Yeah. I mean, this is my full-time job.
Well, that would explain it.
I do Twitch full-time, which is why you see me streaming a lot. And then when I'm not streaming, if I'm not doing errands, I'm typically doing stream work.
How long have you been able to make this your full-time job?
Just over 2 years.
I had another Twitch streamer, Seriously Clara, on the show a few months ago, and she was not a full-time streamer, and she, I think, didn't want it to be full-time because then it would feel like work. Does this feel like work for you?
It's a combination. It's really an interesting balance, because when you decide to go full-time as a streamer, you get all of these kind of stresses introduced into your life that you wouldn't have had to deal with before just by being full time. So I know a lot of people who want to do this full time just don't realize that these things will come into play, such as some financial burdens because you're, you know, filing under self-employed. So you have extra things that you would have to pay for that you wouldn't have to do when you're working for another company. And then it's kind of the stress of the competitive nature of the entertainment industry. It's all kinds of things that just are a little bit more stressful than doing this for fun on the side.
I can imagine. And in addition to filing your own taxes, you don't get benefits like healthcare or vacation time.
Right. So you have to plan all of it yourself. And the thing about streamers, especially those who do it full time, is like whenever you're not streaming, you're essentially not benefiting yourself financially. So it's when you take a vacation, I don't know, as a streamer, when I take a vacation, I don't feel like I can ever take a full vacation because I feel like I still want to. I mean, I still need to and want to stream. So I'm like, I'm trying to fit in streams. Like I'm buying some equipment right now for a better travel stream setup so that I can stream wherever and whenever I want, you know. But it just really kind of, it takes over your life when you do it full time. But I wouldn't do it if I didn't love it. So that's, you know, that's the trade-off.
And how is it that you got into this? Did you have a background in video production or game development, or did you just stumble into it?
I actually, I went to college for video and animation. And within my last year, I was hanging out with some friends and they showed me, it was just like a YouTube video of a speedrun, of Mario 64 speedrun. And my mind was blown. I was like, how are they doing this fast? This is crazy. So I looked up, and I'd heard of Twitch, but I hadn't really gotten on it. So I started looking up all these streamers who played these games that I used to play when I was little and saw them speedrunning them. And it was just so fascinating to me. And then from there, I got into watching streamers and found a few that I really liked and got into the communities. And then I wanted to do it.
And how long did it take you to complete your first speedrun?
When I first started streaming, I didn't start by speedrunning. I'm more of a variety streamer, I would say, but I still have like a speedrunner. Speedrunners have like strong affection for the speedrunning community. So I was one of those people who started streaming and I was like, oh, I'd be so bad at speedrunning. Like I can't do it. You know, I don't know what I would speedrun. Like, I don't know what to do. And I hear a lot of people say that. And at this point in my career, I'm like, you just do it. That's kind of how it works. You just decide to do it and you do it. So a couple months into streaming, I had a friend who used to speedrun Kirby 64. So we decided to do like a semi-blind race because Kirby 64 was a game that I played a lot growing up because it's pretty easy just to like play through pretty quickly anyway. So we just did a blind race of it. And I actually had a lot of fun with that. And I was like, well, maybe I'll try to, you know, learn strats for this and see if it's something that would be feasible for me to speedrun. So that was my first game. And it took me, I think it took me like 4 hours. I think so.
How long would you say it took you to achieve the 4 hour mark? Like, were you practicing for weeks or months to achieve that?
No, that was semi-blind.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Kirby 64, again, it's not a super long game to start out with. And I knew it pretty well, just like going through it normally. And the thing about Kirby 64 is not a game that's heavy in glitches. Like, there are no main glitches that you can use in the game at all. So it's essentially a glitchless category. So really, the run is all about optimization, which means like it's just pretty easy to get through if you have some background in playing Kirby games to start out with.
And what is the record for Kirby 64?
For any percent? Let me, if you want a little help on the differences in categories, typically speedruns are broken into different categories, such as any percent, which is trying to get through the game as fast as possible with any means inside the game. So you can't like use, a game shark or something, but you can use glitches and all kinds of things. And it just means like you start the timer at the beginning of the, when you first start the file, and then you end the timer on your last hit of the last boss, you know? So whenever you lose control over your character, basically, that's when you end your timer. So that's just any percent. So like with Zelda Ocarina of Time, they have so many glitches in the game that their any percent category is around 17 minutes. It's crazy. But because Kirby doesn't have any big glitches, the any percent category world record is 58 minutes and like 40 something seconds.
Wow. And have you been able to get it down to that time?
I have not, because the world record holder for that game is amazing at Kirby games. He's like the king of Kirby games. And he's so nice, which is great. It means we have a great community. It's Swordsman Kirby, for anybody who's interested, is the world record holder. But my time is around a 102. And I think somebody just snagged the second place, a new second place position. So I'm down to fourth at the moment. But really, the times go 58, and then the next best time is like a low 102 as well. So it's just a huge margin between Swordsman and the rest of us.
And that's also a significant improvement that you made, going from 4 hours to 1 hour.
Yeah. It's funny. As soon as you learn some basic strategies and like basic movement for your character and how to just move a little quicker, you can cut your time down so quickly. It's kind of like, I know this is a bit of an odd metaphor, but it's kind of like losing weight. If you have a lot of weight to lose, you can tend to shed the first percentage of pounds pretty quickly just by making a couple adjustments. And then you like hit a plateau after a while, and you have to like work to push through it and practice. And it's like, it's the same with speedrunning. You just have to like get in that practice and fine tune everything in order to start jumping lower down in the leaderboards.
I've heard that speedrunners, it's kind of like being an auto mechanic. Instead of driving the car, you're getting under the hood and taking it apart to see what works. Is that about accurate?
Yeah, for sure. I would say there are speedrunners who have different mindsets. There are those who just want to play the game quickly because they enjoy it, and they're not looking to be number one. They're looking to speedrun it for fun. They're looking to see if they can improve their time slowly. But I know a lot of people who don't want to practice. They just want to run the game, and they try to include their practice in speedruns. So they'll do multiple runs and treat it kind of like practice and runs at the same time. And so I would say that's a little farther from your metaphor. But then there are those who are like hardcore speedrunners. They're all about breaking down the game and trying to find all the exploits for it. And but those people are also great because they love working with others. Like it's a really cool community activity to see people go in and try to break a game together. And just see, you know, how optimized they can get it. It's really interesting.
But whether or not you're exploiting glitches, I think it's fair to say that for most games, they were not designed or intended to be speedrun. So you're missing a lot of the game when you speedrun it. Is it still fun, though?
Yeah, I would say so. And it, again, it goes into different speedrunners' mindsets. Actually, there are a couple of games nowadays that are made with intentions for speedrunning. Like they're made and then like there's one game, I think it's called Bound, and it was for the PS4, and they have like a leaderboard time in the game to like show how quickly they do levels and everything, which I mean, I know that's in other games, but it seems like the game was made with a couple of quirks to it to like be speedrun. And I believe Shovel Knight, the guy who created Shovel Knight, wanted to see it speedrun as well. So I think that's actually really cool.
Where does the fun come from in speedrunning?
Where does the fun come from? It's just really fun to, I don't know why, like I tend to be both a creature of habit and somebody who gets bored doing the same thing too often, which is why I mix speedrunning and variety streaming for myself. But that kind of creature of habit nature comes in with speedrunning for me because I like being able to kind of, it's like going through the motions, you know, it's kind of that natural muscle memory thing that you build up with a game. And then, and I like being able to improve my time. I mean, it's really about pushing yourself to be better at what you do. So a lot of times the motivation comes from seeing other speedrunners or people playing the same game, or whenever you do get a personal best, a new PB, it's really exciting. And then you're like, oh, I can totally get better. Or I'll go and watch the world record video and see what kind of improvements I can make. And then when I start incorporating those into my runs, then I feel better about them. I'm like, I know I'm getting more consistent. I'm feeling more energetic about it. And then, you know, and then eventually it'll get better and I'll get a personal best. I know with Kirby, there is a little bit of RNG, which is RNG means random number generator. And that is all of the random stuff that can happen in a game that the game can do randomly to you. As in, like, you know, if you're playing Pokemon and then you randomly come across a Pokemon when you're out in the grass, that's RNG. So, like, there are six bosses in Kirby 64, and they all have, like, 2 to 5 different moves that they can do, and it's RNG depending on what they end up doing, like, in a row. So a couple of those bosses can cause a lot of time loss, and there's nothing you can do about it. And that's RNG, which is why I don't speedrun like RPGs and other games like that, because there's so much RNG that I think it would make me rage a little bit.
Yeah, that sounds like it would be very frustrating where you're doing everything right and somebody else is still getting a better time than you.
Yeah, it's all luck and chance in that instance. And you just have to do runs and hope for optimal RNG. People make jokes about like pray to RNGesus, pray to the RNG gods, you know, for good RNG, please. And then people will often blame runs just on RNG when it's not just RNG that's going to mess you up. It's, you know, human error is going to come into play. And I've been guilty of that too. But yeah.
But how do you work around the human error? For example, if you're speedrunning Super Mario Brothers and you get to 8-4 and your thumb slips and you die, I mean, you would have to start all over if you're trying to achieve a certain time. That must be super frustrating and probably rage quit inducing.
Sometimes. Some speedrunners will get a little upset. it's like the nature of the game. You know, it's just a factor that comes into play. Human error is a thing and you have to be okay with that. And you know, I know a number of people, including myself, occasionally who will get a little down if we continue to make too many errors in one run. We're just like, I'm just like, why am I so bad at this game? And people are like, you're not bad. You're, you know, fourth or third on the leaderboards. And it's just, it's all about mind games. You just have to be like, it's okay. You just restart and then you'll do better next time. Like that's why practice is a great thing to have in speedrunning, even though not everybody wants to do it all the time. It's just, you know, it just practice makes you better.
But not only can practice make you better, there can be other tools that you can use. Are there rules about stuff like emulators?
It depends on the game, actually. The community that surrounds the game are going to be the ones that allow or ban emulators and create the categories that are accepted. So like in Mario 64, it's not like they have just an any percent category and 100%. It's they do it by stars. So they'll do 0/1 star and then 70 star and then 120 star. So they've kind of created the rules around that. And so some game communities allow emulated versions and some don't. And again, it all depends on what the game is. And usually it's because emulated versions can have different load times that may not be accurate to console, or like maybe there's something that's easier to exploit in an emulator that doesn't seem as fair. So it'll just depend on which game you're looking at. And then games in general, depending on which console they're on, are going to have different load times as well. So like with Kirby, Kirby is fastest on the Wii because, I mean, it is technically like the Wii, you know, it's a download virtual console. So it's in a way like an emulator, but we don't have to worry about it on actual emulator because there are no good emulated versions of Kirby 64. The only ones that are available are really bad. So, but yeah, cartridge is actually the slowest, has the slowest load times. But like with Spyro the Dragon is another game that I run, and you can download it on the PS3 or just play it on the disc, and the disc is much faster than the emulated version. So it's all games are different. It's really interesting.
That's interesting. I imagine that regardless of what's allowed with that particular game or community, emulators can still be useful as a training tool, though, if you want to like analyze frame by frame what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a friend who is a glitch hunter in Paper Mario, and he's found a couple of glitches that have helped the speedrun. And he just likes to, he breaks that game down, man. He will break it down. And I've seen images of all this like coding for the game on the side while he's running it that he analyzes to try to see like what he can manipulate. It's really fascinating. And then there are other versions, like with Banjo-Kazooie, you can, because it's like a collect-a-thon, you know, kind of game, there are save codes that you can use. So you can essentially just restart an area without having to like restart the whole game if you want to practice like collecting a jiggy over and over or certain types of notes or something. So that can be really helpful.
So many of these glitches are so esoteric that I can't imagine there's any way to discover them except through dumping the ROM or analyzing what's currently in RAM. Is that true, or are people really just trying everything and seeing what happens?
It's the whole mix. I've heard of people who are doing like what my friend Strider does with Paper Mario and just exploiting it. Like they're breaking down the code. Like he found these like test rooms from Paper Mario that the developers were using. And, you know, so he has like found it that way. And then there are other people who find glitches. It's purely by chance. They just accidentally clipped through a wall. And then they show somebody who speedruns, and the speedrunner's like, we can use this. Let's figure out how you did it. So sometimes, yeah, it's by chance. And then people go back and try to break down how it actually happened. And that's just with a combination of things. I don't know. Like, I don't know how exactly they found with Ocarina of Time. But basically, you can beat the first boss, but not go through the warp. But you activate the warp out. And then you, like, go back through the previous door with the right movement, or like on the right frame, and it'll take you to the end of Ganon's castle. And I'm like, that can't be by chance. Somebody had to have gone through the coding for the door and figured out on which frame it would take you to the end of the game.
Right, because even if you do accidentally discover a glitch, there must be so many variables involved that you'll never be able to replicate it unless you know precisely what you're doing.
Right, unless you're playing an N64 game like Donkey Kong 64, because you can just go through like any wall in that game.
Oh, is it that glitchy?
Oh, it's so bad. It's so hilariously bad. When you watch speedruns, you're like, wow, you can just walk into a corner and you just like go through the wall. It's really funny. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Most of the games that I speedrun, because of my impatience with life, sometimes I try to pick games that aren't too heavy in glitches. So I think the biggest glitch that I do is I skip an area in Splatoon, because I run that game. You can skip a whole area. And then I have some smaller glitches in Spyro, which are actually pretty fun to do. You know, you just have to practice to make sure you have it all down.
Are those some of your favorite games to speedrun?
Yeah, I mean, those are the main games that I do run. I'm a little picky about what I run, because I don't want to run anything too long or like too heavy on RNG, or with glitches that are going to just frustrate the hell out of me. Because I just don't see myself enjoying them as much. It's just kind of my tolerance level. I've just learned my own tolerance level. And then there are people who, again, will like speedrun Final Fantasies or Zeldas. And I have a ton of respect for them and actually love watching those runs. It's just like, I don't think I would maintain a positive and happy personality while I did those, while like attempted those kinds of speedruns.
Once you finish a speedrun, is that it? Do you just put it on the shelf, or do you keep going back to it either to improve your time or just to appreciate the routine?
I tend to go back to it because I want to improve my time. Like, I will focus on, because I know that I'm really back and forth about things, like, you know, I'm ADD. So because I know that about myself, I try to speedrun one game at a time. So like for a couple months, I'll just speedrun one game. Like, so I'll speedrun the game a couple times, and then I do variety for the other half of my stream. So I kind of split my stream in half. But it's just that one game for a while, because I want to actually improve my time rather than learn too many games at once, because then I feel like I would never reach the goals that I set for myself for my games. And, you know, I know people who do the exact opposite. They love just expanding their speedrun selection. You know, they like expanding all the games that they know, because they just like running whatever, you know, they think it's interesting to them. But I guess there's that part of me that's a little competitive, and I do want to get better. I like seeing that time go down, because I know that I can.
And yet you do all this on Twitch, where people can see all your fumbles and foibles, as opposed to doing it on YouTube, where you can edit your work and put only the final result forward. Do you prefer being that exposed or that vulnerable on Twitch?
Well, I've been doing it for almost 3 years, so at this point I kind of don't mind. I don't know. I feel like the faults and failures make you more of a person. Like, you're more relatable, and people can come in and see the days when you don't have a good day of speedrunning. And like, you know, I die a couple of times in Kirby, which, you know, makes you lose all your time. And then they're like, oh, that's okay, because, you know, I had a horrible run the other day when I was speedrunning. And I'm like, that's cool, man. We all have those days. So I don't know. I think it's why I like being live in front of people, and it's why I like using webcam, or it's why I don't mind messing up at speedruns. It's just I think you're more relatable as a human being.
And it also probably eliminates the need to do a lot of editing if you're not putting it on YouTube.
Yeah. Oh my God, so nice. Because you can go live, you have a stream, you know what? And if I really, really hated something in my stream, one day I could just delete the VOD, and I'm not going to really mind, because, you know, I do similar things every day. I like the feeling of just doing it live and just getting it out there. Editing things, since my major was like video and animation, I'm used to being an editor. Like, I've done that a lot. It takes a lot of work and a lot of time. And I would rather spend my time interacting with people, because I love that kind of socializing entertainment element of streaming. Like, it's so much fun for me that I prefer that over editing. And like talking to myself like I would if I was on YouTube.
If you're not editing, are there other things you're doing off camera to prepare for your streams?
Yeah, I have a huge list of things that I want to do for stream written down right now that I've organized lately, like any special holiday streams coming up or things I want to do for that, new things I want to create on stream, like overlays and new notifications, making new emotes, contacting new artists, trying to figure out what events I'm going to, setting up activities on my Discord. I have new equipment I'm trying to set up right now. let's see, what else is on my list? Trying to write down new strategies to practice for speedruns. I want to do more with voice acting. Like, it's all of these kind of random small things that all contribute to the stream in one way or another that, yeah, I'm typically working on. And even just like making sure I try to check up and keep up with messages, that can take a lot of your day, actually, which is why I get so behind.
So you spend a lot of time interacting with the community?
I do.
Do you do that while you're streaming? Because I can't imagine that you can allow yourself to be distracted while speedrunning.
Well, I mean, okay. So when you speedrun, you find times when you get to know a game well enough, when you run it often enough, where you know that your character is doing something automatically, and then you can like glance over a chat, or you know when all the loading screens are, and then you can look at chat. So I've learned how to do it often enough where I can keep up with chat pretty well while I'm speedrunning. And people are like, how are you doing this? And I'm like, it's practice, man. It's all practice. I mean, it's like when you first start streaming and you first get an audience, like a regular audience, and you're like, oh my God, okay, I have to play a game and talk to people at the same time. And then you learn how to do that. Speedrunning is just kind of adding an extra element, but you just learn how to incorporate it. Like you just learn how to mix the two together. So yeah, I mean, there'll be times where I will warn chat if I have a solid block where I have to be paying attention to the game all the time. And I'll be like, guys, I'm sorry if I miss chat. This is a really important area to get through. But then there are other times where I'm like, oh, it's a loading screen. What's up, chat? How you guys doing? Or there's like a boss in Kirby where like the first minute, if you just like flatten out Kirby on the floor, he's like probably not going to get hit. So I can just talk to chat for like a solid minute. And then I'm like, okay, back to the speed run.
So you really have to know the game.
Yeah. So the better you know the game, the easier it is to keep up with your chat.
And do you find your community is pretty supportive? They like your stuff?
I think so.
You hope so.
Of course you always hope so. But yeah, no, they seem to really enjoy it. I know the people who come in just because I speedrun, and I know the people who come in and they're like, I don't know what speedrunning is. This is okay. I'll have this on in the background. And then they want to, but they like prefer to see the games that I play casually, because that's when I do things like Zelda games and RPGs that I don't speedrun. So yeah, no, people, if they hated the content, I think it would be easier to tell. But they get really excited. Yeah, like when a speedrunner is doing really well on a speedrun and people are there and they like seeing the run, like they're going to get super excited about it and they'll just start cheering you on. Like if I asked for cheering, like when I speedrun Splatoon, the final boss is way longer than anything else that you do in the game. Like the other bosses you can fight in like 2 minutes, you know, per boss. The final boss, it used to be like a 10-minute fight and the speedrun's only an hour. Now, like, world record for Splatoon is like 52 minutes. And the final boss fight is down to like 8 minutes, I believe. But still, like, that's a long time. Like, that's a large percentage of the run. So at the end of that fight, the music changes. Like, you have a small cutscene before the last phase of the fight, and then the music changes. And I go, okay, everybody dance. And I have like a dance command with like a little, you know, like text emoji dancing dude, and then everybody just like floods. It's just chat gets flooded with people like doing the little dance thing back and forth. And they it's really fun. It's just like a fun thing to do to hype up a streamer while they're speedrunning. So I would say that they enjoy that for sure.
Do you get many trolls or anything of the sort in your channel?
It's the internet. I'm live on the internet.
Right.
And I speedrun and I'm a female. So yes, I've gotten trolls of all kinds over the years. But fortunately, I try to run games and play games and have a community that's fun and positive and supportive. And like the games are fun and adventurous and nostalgic because I play a lot of retro gaming, that where it kind of decreases that initial percentage of trolls finding the stream in the first place. So it's great. And then my mods will just see it and they're just like, get out. And then if I can make a joke out of it, I will. Absolutely. But so yeah, they come in, but I have created an environment that minimalizes the appearance of people who want to be shitters. And I'm pretty proud of that.
And there is strength in numbers. Not only do you have your mods watching your back, but you're also on several teams, as I mentioned at the top of the show, such as Girls on Fire.
Girls on Fire! So that's a team that I started. You need to be a partner to create a team on Twitch and then get it approved. So it was suggested to me. They were like, oh, we need a girl speedrunning team. And I'm like, absolutely. That's an awesome idea. So I created Girls on Fire. And we are, like I said, an all-girl speedrunning team because not only are girls the minority in gaming, but we're like the severe minority in the speedrunning community. But we exist. We're here. Like, we love speedrunning. So Yellow Killer Bee and I are the co-captains for that team. And we're trying to do events like once a month. Like, we did some Mario Kart the other day, and we'll plan another like charity speedrunning event soon. To just kind of showcase that, you know, ladies are involved in speedrunning and we want to be there to support each other and support everybody else. And And it's great. And the girls that are on our team they're so sweet. And it's really nice to have a team that's so excited to do things together. It's really adorable.
Now, in the Twitch parlance, what does it mean to have a team? How do you support each other or network with each other?
Well, a team is really what you make it. I've seen teams who are inactive or super active, like as much as you would imagine. So like, I'm a part of a couple of teams. Like there's one old team from a game that I speed ran a couple of times. And like, I haven't talked to them in a long time. I'm kind of on the team and I'm like, is this still happening? You know? And then like, it's from that range up to, you know, Girls on Fire trying to do like regular events. And whenever we go to the GDQs, the Games Done Quick marathons, we do fun card challenges. So if people can like collect cards of all the girls who are there, we'll give them like a prize for it. Cause we're like, yo, it's just a way to spread the fact that like, this is a team and we do stuff together and there are girls here. But yeah, so there's like the whole range and then that you can support each other. So a lot of it's through like hosting each other's channels. You can set Twitch now finally has it. So you can auto host just like a team specifically. I've had a hosting bot for another one of my teams for a long time for the Wigglers. And then, you know, you want to raid into each other. You want to host each other, do activities together when you can. A team's really going to be what you make of it, you know?
Do you ever get together in one place and do a live stream together?
That's a lot harder to do.
I can imagine. You must be very geographically diverse.
Right. Yeah. So we have people living everywhere. I mean, on Girls on Fire alone, we have teammates all over the U.S., in Australia, in the Netherlands, just kind of all over the world. So getting together for an event, I mean, the event that we're most likely all going to go to are going to be the Games Done Quick charity marathons. That's where we tend to meet up the most. And that's why we do those like card activities, like the card challenges, because that's something that we can all do while we're there, which is cool. And then we'll have a meeting while we're there. And we always talk about the team and it's fun. And otherwise, join activities, either you'll all stream at the same time and you can be in a call together, or one person might come over and visit another person and then you'll just have a dual stream. But anything bigger than that outside of a convention is pretty hard to do.
And if somebody wants to join Team Girls on Fire, what are the prerequisites?
We're looking at keeping, like we have a limit cap of how many girls we want on the team, because when you get to be too large of a team, it's really hard to do an activity all together because you're trying to arrange, you know, around multiple people's schedules to begin with. So our team cap is probably going to be about 20 and we're almost there anyway. So for the future, if we're adding any girls, it would probably be those who speed run regularly and have a good community, are looking to do team activities, and and just have a normal enough schedule for stream. So like, you're not like streaming once every other month, you know, you need to be streaming regularly.
You mentioned that when you do get together, it would probably be for something like Awesome Games Done Quick, which just had their winter event. Can you tell us what that was?
We did. Yeah, it was great. It was great. So Games Done Quick is a week-long speedrunning charity marathon, and they either benefit Doctors Without Borders or the Prevent Cancer Foundation. And it happens twice a year. So the Awesome Games Done Quick, which is the winter one, just occurred. And then Summer Games Done Quick will happen this summer right around the 4th of July, which is kind of a silly time. But, you know, it wasn't my decision. And so it's essentially just a actual week, like a scheduled out entire week, 24 hours a day of speedruns just in a row. So the team, there's a team who will review speedrun submissions that we can all submit. So anybody who speedruns a game and has video proof of it can submit a speedrun with the description of the game and like what makes it a good run. And then they pick, you know, whatever games they think will be good for the marathon at the time, and they make a schedule out of it. And then this past GDQ, I think there were around 1,400 people who attended. Which is small compared to a lot of other conventions, like some of the biggest, like PAX or something, but big for speedrunning, obviously, because we are like a niche in the gaming community. It's big for us, and that's where you see like a lot of your friends, and it's cool. Like you get a pass, and most of it takes place in the hotel where the marathon room is happening. So they have like a big marathon room. You can go in and you can watch whatever run is going on at the time. And then they have practice rooms and casual rooms you can game in. And there's like a board game room, which is always really fun for me. And just go out and get foods with your friends. And the great thing about this past GDQ is that they raised, this was more than they've ever raised for a GDQ. Typically, it's around $1 to $1.5 million, which isn't like something to laugh at in the first place. It's super impressive. But this past GDQ, they raised over $2.2 million for the Prevent Cancer Foundation. And it was...
Holy crap.
Yeah. Within the last 12 hours, they raised about a million of that. It was amazing. People just throw money. And it's so cool because it's all for charity. It's amazing. It blows my mind.
Any theories why this year was so much more popular?
I think the right people were around at the right time. So GDQs, some of the ways that they raise money is... with the games that they put in, they add donation incentives for things like about the game. So you can donate to name a file character, or you can donate to get a song sung during like I've sang during Kingdom Hearts games because that was a donation incentive. It was to sing Disney songs because, you know, it's the Disney series. I was asked, like me and a couple others were asked to come in and sing because, you know, they knew that we could sing and like Kingdom Hearts. there are games that are called bonus games where they'll leave a couple of open blocks throughout the week. And if they get enough donations for the game, they'll throw that game into the open block and then that game can be ran. So you can donate to see the game you want speed ran if it's not officially in the schedule yet. So I think just those kind of combinations, like I had a friend who had, it's like a 6-minute speed run of Big the Cat from Sonic Adventure. And within the last like 2 hours before that open block was there, because it was a bonus game, like it raised like the $25,000 that it needed to be put in the run, put in like the schedules. So that was thrown in last minute and he was able to do it because people were just like, they suddenly, it was during the Sonic block since it's a Sonic, since it's in a Sonic game. And people were just like, oh, right, this is a game. We want to see it. So people were just like, you know what? Here's money for the charity and just to support the speedrunner and because I like the speed, like the game, you know? I just think it's just, you get lucky sometimes, and it was just the right combination.
Wow. So which games were you playing this past winter? I know you said you played Kingdom Hearts before. What about this year?
So I haven't gotten the opportunity to run a game at a GDQ.
Oh, okay.
Last year, yeah. So the difference is last year I was offered to help with a donation incentive for Kingdom Hearts, and the two games I was running at the time mainly were Kirby and Splatoon. And me and a number of other runners submitted for those games, and both of them got in, but both of the world record holders were going. So typically they get the opportunity to run the game. So unless they don't want to do it, like the world record holders are going to be the ones running the game if they're going to a GDQ. So they both went. So my involvement for those games were that I was on the couch doing commentary for both of them. So I was, you know, sitting with the runner and helping explain the game and everything. So you can see me there. On couch with them talking about the runs.
So as a commentator, you must know the games pretty well.
Yeah, it's a combination of like, they're going to want people on their couch. Like a runner will want somebody on their couch who has enough experience with the game to be able to talk about it and to educate the crowd on it. Because sometimes people will watch a game for the first time, you know, so they're not going to know what's going on, especially if there are glitches and other speedrunning tactics that are being used that are out of the ordinary. It's good to have somebody who's educated enough to explain it all. So that's who you look for on a couch if you're running a game. And and so I was running Splatoon enough and Kirby enough to be included on the couch so I could help talk about it. Because sometimes the runner just wants to run the game. You know, they're in front of an audience of probably a lot more than usual, like 100 to 150,000 people are watching this stream rather than, you know, however many you get on your own private stream normally. So not wanting to mess up becomes a bit more important.
Wow.
In a way. Yeah. So having somebody else there who can help explain the game is often really useful.
Having an audience like that must be an incredible amount of pressure.
It can be. I know a couple of people who have backed out of doing a run at a GDQ because it was too stressful for them. And so then the next person in line who's there who can run the game will typically be offered to run it instead.
If you were to run a game at Games Done Quick, which game would it be?
I don't know. I think I'd be happy running any of the main three games that I speedrun at the moment. I think there are other people who deserve to run, like Spyro, for example. It's a newer game that, like, it's newer for me in terms of speedrunning it. It's the latest in my arsenal, right? So I don't feel that I'm as strong at the game as a lot of other speedrunners because I'm in a lower place in that game than I am in the other two games that I run more often. So I feel like I wouldn't like deserve it as much unless I worked on getting my time down now. So if I was able to jump higher in the leaderboards, I would feel more confident submitting it. So whatever I think that I have enough skill to speedrun without feeling like I'm taking it away from somebody else, that'll be the game that I run or submit. I always submit Kirby because I think it's fun. And I know that I'm decent at it and it's the one I've been running the longest. Yeah. And I need to get back into Splatoon before I would submit that, but I might, you know.
Do you go to all the GDQ events?
I've been to every GDQ since summer of 2014. This summer, it may be more difficult with my schedule to make it to this Summer Games Done Quick. So I'm not 100% sure on that, but there's still a chance I'll want to go for a couple of days if I can. And I always go to the Awesome Games Done Quick because it's actually only 2 hours away from me at the moment. So it's really easy to get to.
Where are these events held?
The winter one, Awesome Games Done Quick, is held near Dulles Airport, which is west of Washington, D.C. So it's close to D.C. And then Summer Games Done Quick is held, I believe they're going to keep Minneapolis as their official location for the summer one now, because they jumped around a little bit, but the last two have been in Minneapolis.
So the winter one, that isn't too far from MAGFest, is it?
No, it's not, actually. I have people who say they're going to both.
But they're not held at the same time?
No. Oh, they have been, I think, actually.
Oh, cool.
I think there has been some overlap, but, you know, they're not in the same place exactly, so it's not right. Like that's a big deal.
It would be convenient if they were, actually.
Mm. Yeah, that'd be a lot more people in, like, one hotel.
How many people attend one of these Games Done Quick?
Well, again, this one had about 1,400. They have a registration cap, and it's mostly, like, how many people they could fit in a hotel or in the marathon room. So it's typically, I don't think they could ever go above, like, 1,500 for the registration cap, which means if you want to go to a Games Done Quick in the future, you need to register while the registration period is open, because anytime after it's full, they will not let you register unless enough people like drop out for some reason.
That's hardcore.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even when you're not at GDQ, you're also doing fundraising on your own. You do charity streams, right?
I have. Yeah. I have done some charity streams in the past for different things. Like I've done events with my teams. I think we've done one on Girls on Fire. I've done a couple with the Wigglers. We've done the Racing for Change marathon, which we do every summer. And that helps with Game Changers, the charity. Game Changers is great. If you guys have never heard of it, you should look up what they do. It's basically like helping provide equipment and entertainment for kids in hospitals, and also to help pay for their hospital bills as well. It's really cool.
And your own charity streams work similarly, where you are giving people incentive to fundraise and they get to choose the games or get you to sing and dance or whatever?
Well, typically I plan what I will be doing during the event. I did one with another streamer, actually. We raised, which one was that for? I've done one for Toys of Tots, and that was around Christmas, and that was fun. I raised about $4,000 for that. And then I did one with a friend. We raised more than that. I think it was closer to like $7,000. But yeah, typically like I'll plan out the schedule beforehand of what I'm going to be playing and then offer donation incentives in that, like just during the stream, because, you know, I'm in my own place. So I have a lot more opportunity to like wear something funny or like eat. I don't know. I've in the Racing for Change marathons. We've had streamers who like will eat a stick of butter if they hit a certain donation amount. I'm like, I can't do that, but they'll do it. It's entertaining. Right. And, but they also weren't speedrunning, so they didn't have to worry, but they were racing the game, but I don't know. So it's, I don't know. I think they just both like paused it.
Like, my God.
Tried to eat butter and I'm like, I can't. Oh, my God.
No.
But yeah, so I try to offer other things like for my channel, it's more appropriate to like sing a song if I hit a certain amount, you know. So I would do stuff like that. It's just coming up with whatever works best for you.
Do you choose the charities or do the charities choose you?
I've had both. I've had charities come up to me and offer to work together on events. And then I've also had times where I decided, like with the Toys for Tots, I wanted to do that. I wanted to do something charitable that was Christmassy because that was the time that I was doing it in, you know, it was in the holiday season.
Speedrunning is a large part of your Twitch stream. It's also the events you go to. But as you said, you also do some variety streaming. You do other games that you wouldn't necessarily speedrun, like RPGs. And I can't help but wonder, are you able to turn off the speedrun part of you and not analyze a game for efficiencies when you're playing it, quote unquote, just for fun?
Yes, for the most part. I would say that I like really experiencing games as much as possible when I'm playing casual and variety, because I want it to not only be that kind of fun experience for me, but also for the viewers. So I work hard to make sure that I am really exploring a game like as much as I can or as much as I really want to, because sometimes, you know, trying to like 100% a game, even casually, can be like a big daunting task. But just providing a really thorough experience for everybody is really important to me when I'm playing casually. So I am able, that's how I'm able to turn off the speedrunner for the most part. But occasionally I will do something in a casual game where they'll be like, oh, that's like the speedrun strat. And I'm like, yeah, let's go. And I get really excited. And then I'll do it all the time. You know, people will make jokes about like, oh, you're doing the speedrunning strat for this.
Does a game ever get promoted from variety stream to speedrun? Like you think you're just going to play it for fun, but then you decide, you know what? I want to bring this back later as a speedrun game.
That's how I started speedrunning Splatoon, because I played it casually. I played the single player casually, like offline at first, and then I showed people on stream, and I was like, you know what? I think this could be fun to speedrun, and I just started doing it. So it has happened, but for the most part, again, with my personal limitations I have set for myself when in terms of what I would want to speedrun, I've been able to kind of like keep that to a minimum and just play the game how I want to play it. You know, I will say that speedrunners who speedrun a game, when you try to play that game casually, it's really hard to do after that, like to play it entirely casually. I feel like once you know enough exploits and speedrunning strats in a game, you will always incorporate at least one, if not a few of those, even if you're trying to play it casually.
So Kirby 64, it's just ruined for you.
Pretty much.
Oh, no.
But I wouldn't say it's ruined. I would just say that, oh, I can do this faster than you. You know, when I'm talking to somebody who plays it casually, it's just, and like, I can go through the game and like my favorite power is not the fastest, like, because you can do power combinations in this specific Kirby game. So my favorite power combination is not as fast as what you would typically do in a speedrun. So I could do that throughout levels, but I still have little things that I can do that make, you know, it's faster to like slide through a doorway rather than just run through it, like by a fraction of a second, right? But I'm so used to doing it that like, oh, I'm at the end of the room, I got to slide through it because that's how you do it. Like, that's just what you do. Like, so I'm sure that it's just muscle memory kicks in, man. It really does. And it's hard to turn it off if you are playing a game that you speedrun. Like, so another example would be when I played through Spyro 2. I actually only had access to the first Spyro growing up because I didn't have a PlayStation 1. I only got to play it at my cousin's. So I played Spyro 2 for the first time and people are like, wow, you're getting through this so quickly. And I'm like, it's probably because the controls are similar to the first one. So that kind of knowledge of speedrunning the first one is kicking in and is enabling me to be more consistent at the second one, or figure it out faster, or move more with more agility, you know?
And especially if those changes that are being introduced into your gameplay style, if it doesn't affect your enjoyment, I mean, whether you're walking through a door or sliding through a door, you're just going to get there a little bit faster. It's not like walking is inherently fun.
Right. So it's not like it ruins the game as in it makes it not fun. It just, it, you're no longer playing it completely casually. It's just a different experience. So that's why I'm very adamant about not speedrunning games that, like, my absolute favorite games, I never want to speedrun because I don't want to change how I play it. Like, if there's a game that I replay, like Paper Mario is my favorite game, and I don't want to speedrun it because I don't want to change. Like, I love playing through a certain style, like how I kind of grew up teaching myself good strategies for a casual player. I don't want to change that, man. I like my experience with it.
If you could speedrun any game, what would it be?
Oh, I don't know. Like, if I just had natural ability to speedrun a game?
Sure.
I would speedrun. Trying to think. There are games that I really like to watch, but I don't know if I'd really want to play. I think I would want to be better at maybe another Mario game. Maybe a Mario game. Because, like, Mario 3D games, I'm not sure exactly which one I would pick, though. Because everyone's like, oh, you should speedrun Sunshine. You should speedrun Mario Sunshine. Because a lot of my friends in the speedrunning community also run Sunshine. So I feel like the pressure's on, you know. But I started to learn it at one point and wasn't enjoying it as much. So I decided I didn't want to finish learning how to run the game. So I don't know, maybe I would just, if I could just naturally be really good at a game, maybe I would just pick that one.
Are you going to get a Switch?
I am, absolutely.
Woo!
Because, yeah, I grew up with Nintendo, so I love Nintendo. It's like my bread and butter, you know, it's what I grew up with. So, and especially as a streamer, I'm going to want the latest and greatest of the systems that I currently run. And I'm a console streamer for the most part, so it only makes sense, really. To get the Switch and to test it out and to be one of those people that people can come to on Twitch and be like, so what do you think of the Switch? What's your experience with it? And I can answer those questions.
Awesome. I will definitely tune in to get the answer to that because I too am picking up a Switch.
Okay, that sounds great. I'll let you know when it comes out.
So I've learned almost everything I want to about speedrunning today, but I have three more questions for you, which I think are a little bit more random.
Okay, go for it.
So on your website, you have an FAQ, and there one of the questions I did not understand, which meant I couldn't understand the answer either, because there was a term I didn't understand. Why is Kappa banned?
Kappa is an emote on Twitch. It's like one of the biggest, most used emotes on Twitch. It's also the most banned emote that is a global Twitch emote that I know of. I know a lot of other streamers who ban Kappa. The Kappa is a sarcastic emote. So it's a guy making a really sarcastic face. And just growing up on Twitch over the last couple of years, I just saw people using it with jokes that were really sarcastic and a negative or sometimes offensive or rude or disrespectful way. So, like, they would say something mean to somebody else and put a Kappa on the end of it and then be like, it's a joke, man. Didn't you see the Kappa? And I'm like, that's still really rude. Like, why would you say that? So, like, I don't like to encourage those kinds of jokes. Cause, like, if you're going to make fun of somebody, make fun of a friend that knows that you're joking and don't actually be mean to them. You know, it's like, you gotta be cool, man. Be cool. Don't be super disrespectful. So Kappa tends to lead to more of those jokes or that kind of atmosphere that I don't want. So I banned it. And I'm like, you can use other sarcastic emotes that are more clever, more creative, and then make jokes that are more creative. And I know a lot of other streamers who feel the same way.
And as the manager of your stream, you have the ability to prevent the usage of an emote?
Yeah, I can ban whatever I want in my stream. Anybody can ban whatever they want in their stream. You go into your settings and you have banned words that you can add in your stream, or you can ban stuff with a bot. Like, my bot in my stream knows link shorteners and spam bot phrases and links, and it will purge those automatically.
Huh, I had no idea.
And I have a couple other words that I think are just a little offensive. Like, if they were ever used in my stream, it would probably never be for a positive reason. So I just ban them.
Sure. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. You control the stream that you want, the environment that you want. And I want to foster something that's positive and supportive and fun and not memey and trolly and negative and rude.
Right. You have to take responsibility for cultivating your community.
Right. You can be theme in the channel. You just got to do it in a creative way.
Right. Of course. Okay. So that was my first question. My second one, do rabbits make good pets?
Yes. It depends. It's like speedrunning a game. It depends on the experience you want. You know, if you want something that's like a dog, get a dog. If you want something that's going to be more quiet, a bit easier to maintain, friendly to kind of sit with, then a bunny could be a great pet. You just have to make sure I'm a really big advocate on making sure people know the proper care for bunnies. So stop me if I go too far, but I'll try to paraphrase with, if you're going to own a bunny, make sure that you rabbit proof your apartment. Don't keep a rabbit in a cage all day. If you want to bond with it, don't pick it up. And make sure you read up enough on rabbit care before getting one to know exactly how to feed it and what signs to look out for when it gets injured. Because rabbits, and remember that it lives 8 to 12 years if you take care of it properly. But rabbits can also get sick and die really quickly as well. So you just have to know what to look for. But she's like a nice little companion. She's very quiet for the most part, and she's not stinky, and she's very sweet. And it's kind of cool to be able to say, like, yeah, I have a live rabbit in my apartment. It's my bunny. She's just my little thing, you know, my little pet.
And that's Baldwin?
Baldwin, yeah. When I first got her, I got her from another girl who had only owned her for about 2 months before realizing that she couldn't take care of pets at the moment, and thought that Baldwin was a boy, which is why when I say the name Baldwin, everyone automatically assumes it's a boy first, but it's a girl. And I thought the name was funny, so I kept it.
Because I have had this fascination with rabbits ever since, as a little kid, I watched the movie Watership Down.
Okay.
But I was under the impression that rabbits are always chewing on things, and I thought with all my video games around, they would just chew right through those cables.
They will. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So that was
correct. They love chewing wires. Yes. Yeah. So rabbits, with their digestive system, they need to be eating very regularly. So I'm actually looking at, I have a bunny cam on my stream, and I have it up on my PC right now, and I can see she's eating hay right now. So she's chewing on stuff at the moment. But whenever I let her out in the apartment, her cage is open to half of my apartment pretty much all the time. And I have all my cables put away out of reach or covered with some sort of tubing or something protective, so she won't get to the actual wire itself, because she chewed through one of my laptop chargers in about 5-10 seconds once, and that's $70 down the drain, and it could have electrocuted her. So they chew. They do that. You just that's why you have to bunny proof.
It's a lot of work, but then again, so is any pet.
Right. So it's basically once you prepare your home for a rabbit, and if you know how to feed them regularly, feed them correctly, they're pretty low maintenance.
Cool. I'll have to keep that in mind. Maybe I should get one.
Yeah. Well, again, just make sure you know that they do live for longer than you would think. And they can get sick really easily, and they try not to show it. So you have to know, if they don't eat for 12 hours or more, take them to the emergency room.
Oh, gosh.
And you have to find a hospital that will accept exotics, because bunnies are considered exotic pets. Most animal hospitals are only for cats and dogs. So just things like that.
Huh, I did not know that.
Yeah, so you just have to be prepared for those situations in case they happen, or else you could lose your rabbit pretty quickly.
Although I did learn that a lot of apartments, when they say no pets allowed, what they mean is dogs and cats. And if you ask about a caged animal like a rabbit, they'll say, oh, that's fine.
Yeah, well, they also don't expect that rabbits should be let out as often as dogs and cats.
Well, we don't need to tell them that.
Right. That's your responsibility. If they for some reason pee on the hardwood floor, it can ruin it. So just be careful.
Oh, I have hardwood floors. Good to know.
Yeah. Well, just cover the area around their cage. Just put some sort of protective layer over that. I got a piece of vinyl on my old apartment, and I have she just has a big litter box. You can litter train a rabbit, so they can behave.
Okay.
They can.
And my last question, where does the name Kung Fu Fruit Cup come from?
A lot of people ask that. It's a high school inside joke. So so basically, I did a lot of theater in high school. I loved it. And I started backstage helping out with crew, and then went on stage and did a lot of acting, if you can't tell. And it was just like one random night I was helping either build or break down a set for a play. And, you know, there was a piece of scrim, which is like the cloth that you use to hang in the back of the theater. There's just like a piece of it lying around, and the stage set designer like tied it around my head, you know, like a kung fu warrior. And then when we went to dinner, I still had it on because I thought it was funny, and I got a fruit cup with my dinner. And he's like, oh, you're like a kung fu fruit cup. Not as interesting of a story as you would hope. And the name kind of stuck ever since.
So this is a name that has stuck with you all those years? It's not something you brought out of retirement when you joined Twitch?
No, I used it. I used to use it for like some other online accounts, because who on this earth would use a name like Kung Fu Fruit Cup for an account? It's always available, you know, or it was. So I used to use that for things. And then, and so I used it for my Twitch account. And then I was like, oh, I'm streaming, but people already know who I am, so I guess it's too late to change the name. And so I've just kind of, you know, rolled with it ever since.
And now you're famous.
No, I don't use that term with myself. I think it's weird. It's weird.
But wasn't there a line of people to meet you at TwitchCon? No?
Yes. But I don't know. When I like using the term that I'm like an online personality.
You're internet famous.
I am. You know what? Somebody used the term. I was listening to another podcast, but I think it was just like Radiolab or something. And somebody used the term like nerd famous. And I'm like, that's hilarious. I love that.
It's perfect.
But I still wouldn't use it for myself. I'm an online personality. I know some people know about me, and that's about it.
You are certainly a personality. That is true.
Thank you. Thank you.
So remind our listeners where we can find you online.
Anywhere you can just search the term Kung Fu Fruit Cup. I mean, literally all of my accounts related to Twitch are just Kung Fu Fruit Cup. So twitch.tv/Kung Fu Fruit Cup. It's the same on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, PlayStation. I don't know.
Everywhere.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, and one last question. If somebody wants to get into speedrunning, what's one piece of advice you'd give them?
Just do it. Just start doing it. Just pick a game that you enjoy playing, have some knowledge of, and don't think you would hate to try to play fast, and just try it and see if you like it. You know, don't be concerned if your time is not fast the first time you run a game. That's not how it works, you know? You don't just like play a game and you're magically amazing at it. Like, speedrunning takes practice, and your time will not be good at first, and that is okay. That's normal. Everybody goes through it.
Well, that's very encouraging. Thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. This has been really fun.
This has been Polygamer, a GameBits production. Find more episodes, read our blog, or send feedback at polygamer.net.
Yeah, I think that I have reduced my ability to use the English language because I talk so much, which seems a little contradictory, you know, but I think I just talk so quickly and so often on stream that I you know, sound dyslexic sometimes. I'll just mix up words and letters, and then I'll be like, guys, I'm just going to go. And I'll just like mute my mic for a minute and then come back and be like, I'm sorry. Just bad at talking.